Good afternoon from the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau. I'm Yvonne Crumery. Thank you for tuning in. A group of state lawmakers tasked with drafting a final version of Alaska LNG tax relief bill kicked off work this weekend. That's after Governor Mike Dunleavy rejected the version passed by the Senate earlier this month and called lawmakers back into special session. The six-member committee spent Friday and Saturday in something of a public negotiation with developer Glen Farne and the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation, or AGDC. Glen Farne's Alaska head, Adam Prestige, suggested numerous changes to the bill, most prominently to two amendments added on the Senate floor. One laid out a series of union labor requirements. Prestige said those go well beyond an agreement the developer signed with Alaska labor groups earlier this month. He said repeatedly on Saturday that Memorandum of Understanding, or MOU, is a legally binding commitment.
We have an agreement that will prioritize Alaska labor first. That's been something Glen Farne has been committed to since day one of our agreement with AGDC. We've now memorialized it in the binding MOU itself.
He said the amendment approved by the Senate would go too far, including by imposing Alaska wage requirements on fabrication yards in, say, South Korea. The other hot topic on Saturday was the Senate's inclusion of what's known as a pass-through entities tax. That would subject LLCs in the oil and gas business, including Glen Farne and large oil and gas producer Hillcorp, to the state's corporate income tax. Some Senate lawmakers have pushed for the change for years. Glen Farne opposes the tax, but Senator Bert Stedman, a Sitka Republican, said the state can't constitutionally commit to never imposing it. And he suggested it might be better for everyone to make the tax change sooner rather than later.
I'm not so sure it would be fair to the investors with the momentum being built in the state to put billions of dollars on the table in equity and have tens of billions in debt and have us change the tax structure midstream.
Lawmakers were scheduled to return to the negotiating table for another public meeting earlier today. Governor Mike Dunleavy vetoed nearly $500,000 from the state budget Wednesday that would have gone towards efforts to retain and recruit teachers in Alaska. The Alaska Educator Retention and Recruitment Center began almost 2 years ago. Jennifer Schmitz is the executive director of the organization. She says its services include marketing teaching positions and helping districts with professional development.
Anything that has to do with recruitment and retention, and you say a district says, we need help with this, we are the people that help them with that.
Schmitz says they also support hiring teachers internationally, and the funding could have expanded efforts to support special education teachers hired from the Philippines. Districts have turned to hiring teachers internationally in recent years to address staffing shortages. Representative Rebecca Hemshute, an independent from Sitka and co-chair of the House Education Committee, says she's upset about the vetoed funding.
We are intimately involved with this budget, and then to have things sliced out of it every year is very, very frustrating.
She says the organization has been working on recommendations laid out by Dunleavy's Teacher Recruitment and Retention Task Force that met in 2020. Lisa Parity is executive director for the Alaska Council for School Administrators, which runs the recruitment organization. She says the organization will continue to support recruitment and retention efforts, but that Alaska children will still feel the effects of teacher shortages.
Our children experience the consequences of educator shortage every single day, and we are committed to continuing to work against educator shortage.
Parity says the organization's board will meet to figure out which services will still be provided. Lawmakers have a chance to override the veto as early as July 1st. And a new jiu-jitsu studio opened in Juneau this month. It's a nonprofit, and its founders say they want it to be a welcoming and approachable space for anyone who wants to get into the sport. Right off the bat, I wasn't prepared, and I definitely wasn't prepared physically. I didn't have shorts to wear under my gi. That's the jacket, pants, and belt ensemble people typically practice jiu-jitsu in.
Sometimes the pants come down a little bit.
Totally. That's one of the things I envisioned when I was dreading this today, was getting pants.
But Flow State Jiu-Jitsu and Yoga founding member Skylar Bayer saved me from that fate. She found shorts for me. Once we were all suited up, we began to practice holds that everyone else had already learned. Of course, I was the only new person. Bear walked me through what's called a mount, demonstrating on a willing volunteer.
I'm on top of her, her back's on the mat. This is a very, very bad position for her, because my hips are on top of her hips. It means I can, like, choke her, break her arms, all sorts of things. And then
that willing volunteer was Margaret Katzik, and Katzik quickly threw her off in a graceful motion. Then it was my turn to escape.
Okay. You okay? Sure.
I wormed my way out from under Katzik less gracefully. She was a good sport about it. Next, the three of us practiced a chokehold. This was harder for me. Instructor Becca Carboneau checked in on us.
Yep. Bring these elbows in and down.
How's that feel, Margaret? What are we missing?
Katzik kindly indicated I wasn't really doing that much of a chokehold.
Yeah, I'm kind of afraid to choke her.
Okay. Good. Yeah. She's fine.
But getting over fear is sort of what this whole thing is about. Bear told me.
One of the things that often happens when people do martial arts is they become more confident.
Yeah.
So the way they just carry themselves makes them less likely to be targeted.
She told me the space is built on consent, trust, and care for the people you're literally grappling with. The people in the holds tap out when they hit their limits, tapping either on their partner's arms or legs or on the mat. Instructor Carboneau told me before class that Flow State started as a way to share jiu-jitsu with the community. She says they try and bring that mutual respect off the mat and into every area of the business.
Yeah, so there's a group of us in town that have trained jiu-jitsu for a long time in different spaces, started in different areas, but became a good group of training partners and friends over time, and all really value different styles of training, diversity of thought and experiences.
Ann Carboneau loves jiu-jitsu. She's good at it, and she competes across the country.
I got bored of running and lifting. I needed something more mentally engaging, and if you do jiu-jitsu, you like, can't think about literally anything else when you're trying not to get strangled.
Bear, who was acting as my personal coach for the evening, walked me through another hold and escape, the backpack hold. We're seated on the mat. First, she wraps her legs around my waist from behind me like a koala. Then her arms slide under my armpit and over my shoulder.
This is what's going to control you really well. And so what she was just going over was like how to escape that. Okay. Wiggle out like a little animal.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And wiggle out I did. Then she shows me how to choke someone from behind. She did it first. And then I got over my fears and I tried. I did a bit better this time. After class, I checked back in with Margaret Katzeek to make sure there were no hard feelings about my attempt to choke her. There wasn't. She says she started learning jiu-jitsu years ago for the self-defense aspect. But now, she keeps coming back because it really engages her.
Like, I play softball, basketball, volleyball. It's just such a different sport. Yeah, like, I think it just mindful strength. Strengthen, like, your mind and body. I think it touches all those aspects.
And she stays engaged, even when she's not in class, by thinking about how to improve her escapes. She hopes the space will encourage more people to give the sport a shot.
You just got to try it. You're starting out at the same place that anybody else has started out.
And Flow State also has yoga classes. But this beginner class was enough for me. Tapping out in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cromery. And Pride is a big event, people coming together from all walks of life to celebrate LGBTQ+ culture and history. But it's also a collection of individual stories. Alaska Public Media's Hannah Floor talked to one couple about their experience over nearly 50 years together and how they're thinking about the future.
78-year-old Gail Hsu is leading half a dozen LGBTQ+ elders through the parking lot of the Anchorage Senior Center, sashaying to Donna Summer.
See, the music is off. This part.
They're rehearsing for a dance for the Pride Parade, using walkers as props.
Precision is not a word that you'll hear affiliated with us. We want people to have a good time.
Gail's 83-year-old wife, Julie Schmidt, is inside. She's chatting with those who, like her, aren't quite up for the dancing. They'll ride on the float. The two have been celebrating Pride together for decades. It's been nearly 50 years since they got together.
We started playing softball together.
Typical lesbian story.
Yeah.
Really. They moved in together and bought a house in suburban Illinois. They were teachers. Gail says their lives were typical. Lesson planning and walking the dog, camping in the summer, groceries and dinner. But they were also hiding who they were. Gail says that's how it was for most people of their generation.
It was unheard of in the 70s, 80s, 90s to come out. People were afraid of losing their jobs, their friends, their families.
She says they got the message that they were an abomination in so many different ways. Government policies and jokes on TV, or her dad's reaction when she told him she was gay.
He said, "You'll never have any friends. You'll be miserable all of your life. And when we hang up the phone, don't contact me again. Don't try to call. Don't send me a letter. We are done."
It wasn't until the couple retired and moved to Alaska, nearly 25 years into their relationship, that they started coming out more broadly. Gail says at first it was a calculation. Is this person safe? Do I have the energy to deal with a bad reaction? Like when she was at the dentist, in the chair, mouthful of tools, and he asked her if her husband was in the military.
In a split second, you have to decide, Are you going to tell this man something extremely personal about yourself and your life?
That was the last time, she says, that she had to decide.
I just looked up and said, once the instruments were gone, I said, no, not military, and my wife's name is Julie. And that was just like the dam broke, and I was never back in the closet again.
Julie says it's such a relief just to be who they are, say what they want, and not have to watch every word. It's not something they imagined was possible all those years ago. Things were getting a little better, she says. There were more rainbow flags in the world. Same-sex marriage was legal in more countries. It started to feel easier to be gay. But Julie says that's changed recently.
It feels like we're moving backward over the last few years.
Gail's worried people are going to have to start going back in the closet.
We know how to hide because we've hidden. And I believe that there are young people who don't know how to hide, and this is going to be painful for them.
She hopes it doesn't come to that. She hopes people never have to experience the feeling of having to calculate constantly who's safe and who's not. Julie says that's why pride is important. It's about loving who they are, she says, being proud, celebrating it, especially after hiding for so much of their lives, especially when you're in the parade, she says. It's a great feeling, a high.
There are people out there cheering for us, people that we know, people that we don't know, allies, friends.
People that understand your story.
Right, right.
It's not something either of them got to feel all those years ago when they were closeted school teachers in suburban Illinois. In Anchorage, I'm Hannah Flohr.
This is KTOO. Thank you for listening.